It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. On the eve of the preliminary hearing for the man charged with dozens of counts of hate crimes and murder in the Tree of Life synagogue shootings, a student-led rally called for an end to hate and gun violence. We'll talk about that. And has Mr. Rogers' famous line, "Look for the helpers," been co-opted? But first, with the election on Tuesday, Democrats are telling voters to hold Republicans responsible for trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. WITF's Brett Schultes reports those Republicans are working to prove they support protections for people with pre-existing conditions.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk to you about something you're probably seeing on TV, generally sponsored by Nancy Pelosi, who's helping my opponent.
That's Republican U.S. Representative Scott Perry of the 10th Congressional District talking on Facebook Live. His opponent, Democrat George Scott, is going after Perry for voting to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Perry says when he voted against the ACA, he wasn't voting against one of its key provisions, a law that prevents insurers from denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions.
They're telling you that I voted 37 times against pre-existing conditions. And let me just make this clear. That's a lie. What I did was I voted however many times it took to get rid of Obamacare.
He's not the only Republican Democrats are targeting for voting to repeal the ACA.
Too many families are making gut-wrenching choices. Pay the monthly bills or get the health care and prescriptions they need to survive. Why would Marty Nothstein want to go to Congress to take health care away?
That's Democratic congressional candidate Susan Wild vying to beat Republican Marty Nothstein in Pennsylvania's 7th District. In this case, Nothstein isn't even an incumbent and therefore hasn't voted against the ACA. Still, Nothstein finds himself on the defensive, like at this recent debate, where he says he supports pre-existing coverage protections.
I support the House Bill 1121, the Pre-Existing Conditions Protection Act of 2017, which does exactly what the name implies. I oppose Obamacare because it's a deeply flawed law that has made things worse for so many.
It's no coincidence that Democratic ads focusing on health care are sweeping the Commonwealth. Health care is Pennsylvania voters' top issue this year, according to a recent Politico AARP poll. At the center of the discussion is whether a vote to repeal the ACA is tantamount to a vote to end protections for people with pre-existing conditions.
And that's why Republicans particularly are on the defensive, because they have struggled to explain what they are leaving in place of what is the ACA.
Rodney Whitlock is a health policy expert who spent years working for Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. Whitlock says the narrative around the ACA has changed.
Since the election of Donald Trump, Democrats have been able to pivot to effectively say, the Republicans are trying to make it all go away, and let's talk specifically now about the provisions they are and have in legislation tried to repeal.
That's led Republicans, including Scott Perry, to point to other legislative efforts they say would ensure those protections. The most recent of those efforts is a Senate bill introduced in August called Ensuring Coverage for Patients with Pre-Existing Conditions. The problem, according to University of Pennsylvania law professor Allison Hoffman, is that the proposed bill leaves some pretty big loopholes.
It does things like it says to insurers, if somebody who has a pre-existing condition applies, you have to give them insurance coverage. But what it doesn't say is that you have to cover their pre-existing conditions. So just the basic promise that it would cover pre-existing conditions is patently false.
Hoffman says the bill also introduces some ways insurers could raise rates that used to be commonplace before the ACA put a cap on how much an insurer could increase premiums for older people and certain other groups.
It says that you can't charge people based on their health status, but it doesn't say that you can't charge people based on other categories that may be proxies for health status. So you can charge people more based on their age or more based on sex or more based on occupation. And all of these things are characteristics that insurers have historically used as proxies for likely health status as well.
Hoffman notes the ACA is the only rule out there that requires insurers provide coverage to people even if they have pre-existing conditions. Rodney Whitlock says people have gotten used to having the pre-existing coverage protections.
The Democrats have done a masterful job of defining pre-existing conditions as the standard that was set in the Affordable Care Act. and further defining that if you are not doing it as well as what was in the Affordable Care Act, you are necessarily failing.
Whitlock says the challenge Republicans face is explaining how they'll be able to lower health care costs overall while still protecting people who need a lot of care. In Harrisburg, I'm Brett Schultes.
One of Pennsylvania's top Republican lawmakers is being challenged by a Democrat who has never held public office. Speaker of the House Mike Terzai has represented the 28th District since 2001. But as 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins reports, Democrats say the area has changed since then.
Democrat Emily Skopov's three rescue dogs are proudly displayed in her campaign flyers. And they like being close by when she's being interviewed at home.
Hopefully my dogs chewing on their toys are not too wet.
Other canine residents in the district, which includes Bradford Woods, Franklin Park, and Marshall, McCandless, and Pine Townships, may have a harder time choosing a favorite in the race. Skopov was endorsed by Humane PA, and Terzai has an A rating from the group. But that's where the similarities end. Skopov decided to run against Terzai in November of 2016, before anybody was talking about a blue wave for Democratic challengers.
Not that I started the wave. I was just pre-wave. I didn't know there would be a wave.
Skopov worked in California's film industry before she moved to Wexford in 2010 with her family. She says that experience prepared her to join the State House.
You cannot write a TV episode or a movie without reaching a consensus among a ridiculous number of people.
Skopov says Terzai, meanwhile, delayed action on issues like medical marijuana or the 2017 state budget, which was backed by Governor Tom Wolf and state senators in both parties. She says if she were elected, she wouldn't take a paycheck until the budget is passed.
I think of Mike Terzai as a party of one. You can easily lay the blame for that at the feet of Mike Terzai because for years he stomped his feet and didn't want to do it or avoided the conversations or refused to call things to a vote, cancel the vote.
Terzai did not respond to multiple calls, emails, and texts for an interview about this race over the course of a month. His campaign said his schedule was too full. But defenders like Cindy Walterman praise his record.
I think he takes a lot of heat for doing things that conservatives like, holding the line on budgets. You know, it's not always the most popular thing to do, but I think it's important.
Walterman is a Republican and lifelong district resident. She's also the managing editor of the local news site Access McCandless.
I'm thinking about keeping taxes low and being able to provide things for residents that don't necessarily translate into higher taxes.
Walterman says she appreciates Terzai's work to secure grants for things like parks and local firefighters. And she says many voters support his efforts to privatize the Liquor Control Board. Terzai is staunchly pro-life and received an A rating from the National Rifle Association. Skopov is backed by a number of unions, Planned Parenthood, and the Sierra Club. And while she says she's a gun owner herself, she supports regulations like expanded background checks. Driving through the district, there are a lot of campaign signs for Terzai and Skopov. Walterman says there's much more of a mix of signs than there used to be. Matt Merriman Preston is a Democratic political consultant. He says changes to the political landscape go beyond the lawn signs.
The district now, especially as it's become more and more highly educated, might not be as well suited for the hardline Republicanism, which he has traditionally represented.
Across the country, Democrats are targeting college-educated suburban districts like this one. They hope voters in these districts, who are turned off by President Trump, will help Democrats up and down the ballot. Republican consultant Charlie Giroux acknowledges the district is changing. He credits Skopov with an aggressive campaign. But his money is on Terzai, for the same reason Skopov thinks he should be defeated.
I think the fact that Mike Terzai was the one man standing between Pennsylvanians and a tax increase is very much to his benefit. And I think voters in his district recognize that, and I think voters across the state do as well.
Giroux has history on his side. Terzai beat his Democratic opponent in 2016 by 30 percentage points. I'm Lucy Perkins, 90.5 WESA News.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvania's race for governor has featured a lot of back and forth about public schools. Recent polls show education is the second most important issue to voters in this election. Keystone Crossroads sent reporter Avi Wolfman-Arendt to York County, the home base of both candidates, with a simple question. What education issue matters most to you?
The Red Lion School District Board of Education meets twice a month in a small conference room. There's only a few rows of chairs set up for the public, and most of them are empty. But there is one regular, Craig Murphy.
I don't have a problem with it. I'm just asking financial questions.
Murphy is a one-man watchdog, combing through every item on the agenda. And why?
All this stuff costs money.
Murphy grew up in this district southeast of York City and works at a water treatment plant. The area used to be rural, he says, but it's become more suburban as commuters from Baltimore and Philadelphia fill up new developments. And across the county, the taxes are higher here than the state average.
When you have people who are living in Redline and they're working in Baltimore, they're making a hell of a lot more money than I am. Okay, so they can afford the taxes better than I can.
Murphy also worries schools spend too much time on college prep and not enough on vocational training. And I sensed a broader backlash to the need for college while traveling around York County, from administrators on down to students like Trey Bernstein.
I like hands-on. I like being able to do things.
Bernstein goes to the only traditional public high school in York City. He plans to take over his grandpa's hardware store someday. And he wishes he could have focused on the skills he needs back in middle or even elementary school.
Yeah, four-year schools are great, but I want to be able to get right into work first and start working right away and accomplish what I want to accomplish in my life.
Superintendent Eric Holmes hears Bernstein. He wants to create more specialized technical programs in the York City School District. But that takes money, and he says his district doesn't have enough of it.
Well, people hate it when you say that you need more money. But the reality is that you can't run a school district without it.
As a city with deep poverty that's seen its tax base shrink, the York City School District has struggled to match resources with student need. The state contributes the biggest chunk of the district's revenue, but the state's system in general relies very heavily on local property taxes.
And as long as it does, that's inherently unfair. And we're creating pockets of educational poverty.
One fix would be to give York City even more money from the state. The new state funding formula is set up to help districts like York that have high poverty and high tax effort. But relief is planned to happen slowly, over time. Governor Tom Wolf signed that formula into law and has fought to push more money through it. Now in campaign mode, though, he's not giving specifics about what he wants moving forward.
With the system that we have, we're creating a have and have not world in education. And to me, there are lots of little things that I could talk about, but unless we deal with that, nothing is going to change.
Things haven't changed much in the mostly rural Northern York County School District. But there has been one big shift this year, says Superintendent Eric Eschbach. And it started the day after a gunman killed 17 people at a high school in Parkland, Florida.
And I got an email from a student here at the high school saying, I've never been afraid to come to school, and now I'm very worried about coming to school.
Eschbach says the note was life-changing for him. Before, he'd always opposed the idea of putting armed security in his schools.
And yet, when I heard that kind of plea, and similar pleas from other students and parents, it made me reevaluate my thoughts on that and say, okay, if I go to bed at night saying I've done everything I possibly can do to protect our students, have I really done that?
Safety, funding, career training, taxes. You'll hear a little of all that at a Friday night football game. Kennerdale High School near the Maryland border is in the kind of small town where everyone shows up for the big game.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Kennerdale High School, a special homecoming night tonight.
Christina Markle watches the game pressed up against a fence surrounding the field. Like a lot of people around here, she and her husband work down in Maryland, where wages tend to be higher. But they like living in a rural community.
it's a small town, but we know what's going on. We know everybody.
Markle's pretty happy with things in her school district, although she doesn't love the new Common Core-inspired math homework that her kids get.
Like, I work for a doctor, and I'm like, hey, answer this question for me. And he got it wrong, my son got it wrong, I got it wrong, my husband got it wrong, everyone got it wrong.
After chatting for a while, Markle does mention that property taxes are high and references a proposal backed by Republican challenger Scott Wagner to eliminate property taxes for schools and replace them with higher income taxes. The idea sounds good to her, and we start chatting about it. But before Markle can finish, a Kennerdale player breaks off a big run.
And I just think sometimes the people that are getting these huge property taxes,
And just like that, education policy gives way to the buzz of everyday life. Somewhere, there's a governor's race happening. But on Friday night in tiny Fawn Grove, Pennsylvania, you might not hear it above the roar of the crowd. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, Keystone Crossroads.
You're listening to The Confluence.
I'm Megan Harris. The Confluence airs live from 9 to 10 a.m., but the news never stops. Find more stories, conversations, and more on our website at wesa.fm/confluence, on Twitter at wesaconfluence, and wherever you get your podcasts. The Confluence continues next on 90.5 WESA.
Kurt Cobain was long a champion of the music of others. Even in the early days of Nirvana, Cobain took every opportunity to tell us not about himself or his music, but the art that inspired him. It comes as no surprise then that 6 of the 14 songs featured on Nirvana's 1994 MTV Unplugged session were covers.
This was written by the Vaseline's. That was a David Bowie song. All these songs are off their second record. This was written by my favorite performer.
Nirvana's MTV Unplugged in New York was released on this day in 1994. For 91.3 WYEP, I'm Joey Spihar.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. The program Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood aired from 1968 to 2001 and continues in syndication and on streaming services today. The show was intended for preschoolers, but for Pittsburghers, Fred Rogers' image and often his message can feel deeply personal. So what happens when one of his most ubiquitous lines, "Look for the helpers," gets co-opted as a strictly reactive way to cope? Joining me now is Ian Bogost, who penned a piece on that topic for The Atlantic this week after a gunman killed 11 people and injured 6 others in an attack on Tree of Life Congregation Synagogue in Squirrel Hill on Saturday. Ian, welcome to The Confluence.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
What was your Atlantic piece trying to convey?
The idea really is that Mr. Rogers' advice in general and the look for the helpers idea specifically was not meant for adults. It was meant for preschoolers and for the adults who care for young children, who need to help them through difficult times and then less difficult times too. And so when that idea gets adopted as a kind of meme for tragedy, which is what I think it has been, then it cheapens the message for children because it distracts us from understanding that these ideas of Fred Rogers's were built to help adults help children. And it also distracts adults from making real change in the world instead of comforting themselves with a message from Mr. Rogers that maybe wasn't meant for them as adults.
You write with a lot of admiration for Fred Rogers and his messaging. Did he mean anything in your own life?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I grew up with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I still watched it with my kids, and I now watch the Daniel Tiger show with my four-year-old, and I have very fond and strong memories, as I think most Americans do, of Mr. Rogers and his show and his message. I think it's very difficult not to admire the man and also the programming. But as I've grown older, and as I've been watching Mr. Rogers become something like a saintly figure in our culture, it struck me that some of that connection that we used to have to the idea that the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood Project and the lifelong work of Fred Rogers was really about kids. It was about kids and about helping kids. And it's important, I think, to keep that in mind, even as we admire him as a kind of role model for care and attention for adults.
Your piece cites a couple of examples where simple directions can turn into these really sophisticated messages for kids. Would you mind sharing a few?
Yeah, there's a couple of examples, and there's lots more of these from Fred Rogers' work. One of the most famous ones, I think, that's been discussed a lot recently because of the documentary about Fred Rogers that came out is, you know, you start with a simple idea like, it's dangerous to play in the street. And if you don't want your kids to be playing in the street and you tell them that, then, you know, maybe they can't process it. And so Fred Rogers would refine the language that he used to make that notion more comprehensible and more inclusive to young kids. And at the end of this complicated process, he ended up with something like, your favorite grown-ups can tell you where it is safe to play. It is important to try to listen to them, and listening is an important part of growing. That's one of the quotes from that line. So there's so many sophisticated ideas here, but the most interesting one for the purposes of understanding the look for the helpers idea is that your favorite grown-ups, that little clause is just pregnant with all sorts of wisdom. Because it covers parents, it covers guardians who are not parents, it covers teachers or other authorities, it covers people that a child might trust for other reasons, and it's just all compact and packed in there, and it's especially useful for young kids who need to make that judgment and realization. So that's one example. And another example that's directly connected to the look for the helpers phrase is the whole kind of set of lessons that Fred Rogers and that the Fred Rogers Productions company maintains for advising parents and teachers about how to help kids in a time of tragic events. And you can find this on their website. And there's like a set of eight or so bullets, only one of which is this focus attention on the helpers business, and the rest of which are meant to create a kind of holistic plan for making a child feel safe and feel calm and feel as though they are being comforted, physical affection and keeping regular routines going, doing something that the kids like to do with the parents or with those who are in charge of them. And one of those suggestions is also letting a child know if you're, you know, going to get involved. Are you going to a meeting or writing a letter or making a donation or taking some other kind of action? So, you know, when you pull out the look for the helpers line, which is very quotable, and if you've seen a video of Fred Rogers delivering it, it's very moving. Not only is it maybe not applicable to adult life, but also it somewhat cheats the idea even as it was meant to be used for young kids.
Paul Sifkin, the head of Fred Rogers Productions, spoke on the Confluence yesterday. He brought up the phrase almost immediately.
We hear a lot about look for the helpers, and that's an important thing, particularly in the immediate aftermath of a tragedy like this. But we also remind families that there are ways that you can demonstrate to your children that they themselves can be helpers, whether it's just a card that they're writing or demonstrating to your children that you yourself are doing what you can to help.
Do you have any, kind of reaction to that?
I mean, I think it's right. And I think it's one of the things that people who are skeptical, maybe they don't even know why, but they've been hearing and seeing these look for the helpers memes and they feel, something's not right. And you see people saying exactly this, like, nah, it's not enough just to look for the helpers. You have to be the helpers. But if you think about that for a minute, as an adult living in the world that we live in as adults, it's also a kind of an insufficient conclusion to come to. It may be a sufficient start, although I'm skeptical of that for a couple reasons. So one example that we can take from just this week, from this terrible tragedy at Tree of Life, is, you know, moments after this happened almost, we had President Trump saying something like, well, the synagogue should have had protection. You know, we should have had armed guards in places like this, or, you know, the kind of good guys with guns argument. And no matter what you think about that specific case, it's an example where there is a population that believes that armed guards are helpers. And then there's another kind of population that thinks that that's exactly the opposite of what help should look like. So that conversation, that thought process gets muddled when we become satisfied as adults with the notion of helpers. But I think another part of the problem is that even if we knew kind of what help would look like, what it means to be the helper is sometimes much more complicated, and it's especially more complicated with today's intractable problems than it was in the 1930s when Fred Rogers reportedly first heard this idea from his mother, or in the 1960s.
how do you think the passage of time has affected its original intent?
Yeah, I mean, certainly things were difficult in the Depression, and we don't need to undermine that truth in order to you know, question the phrase a little bit. I think one of the big things that's different is that now we're almost not sure where the threats lie and how to address them. They feel murky and cloudy and everywhere all around us. If you think about something like you know, the threat of domestic terrorism or the threat of climate change, or even the threat of nuclear war, which was very much present in the Cold War when Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was being produced and aired. Those are different from the simple ideas of, like, you know, there's a tornado or there was an accident and now we see the paramedics who are trying to help the victims of it. So we've always had, you know, these sort of complicated, murky affairs, but they've gotten harder and harder and harder. The global issues that we face and the way that they localize themselves in our communities have become harder to pin down with problems and obvious solutions. And that's been happening over the last half century regularly. Maybe we need to refine and revise that idea, especially as adults. You know, when you're talking about taking care of kids, you don't need to burden them with those complicated ideas. You want to make them feel safe and comforted. And then the challenge is to ask, okay, well, how do we make progress in this problem, real progress? And too often saying, well, I'm going to be the helper, you know, it's still a kind of a saccharine a kind of greeting card slogan. And then you have to figure out what that really means.
Do you think it's wrong to look for a helper if you really are in need?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, you know, one of the things that I heard in response to this article was, you know, oh, like, here's another cynic trying to take something away from it. And I don't feel that way at all. Of course, there's a certain amount of comfort that everyone deserves to find in the things that give them comfort. But as adults, if we treat this helper concept as the end point, then we're really missing out. You know, you want that immediate comfort. And as a child, that's where things often need to stop because you're not in control. You're not in power. That's the whole problem with being a kid. And that's the delight of the Mr. Rogers experience, is feeling comforted in it. But as an adult, if you're not moving beyond that idea of looking for a helper or looking for some inspiration to make progress and quickly getting into the progress or into the interrogation of what it would mean to secure it, then you're not doing your job as an adult.
Ian Bogost is a contributing editor at The Atlantic and the Ivan Allen College Distinguished Chair in Media Studies at the Georgia Institute of Technology. His latest book is Play Anything. Ian, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Fred Rogers. Some parents wonder how to handle world news with their young children. Well, we at Family Communications have discovered that when children bring up something frightening, it's helpful right away to ask them what they know about it. We often find that their fantasies are very different from the actual truth. What children probably need to hear most from us adults is that they can talk with us about anything, and that we will do all we can to keep them safe in any scary time. I'm always glad to be your neighbor.
I'm Megan Harris. You're listening to The Confluence.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Students and other community members gathered at Schenley Plaza last night in Oakland for what was called a Unite Against Hate rally in the aftermath of the mass fatal shooting Saturday at Tree of Life Synagogue. The rally was hosted by Jewish students as well as Students Demand Action. Joining us in studio, Catherine Fleischer. She is the Jewish Community Liaison for Students Demand Action. And Shai Goodman, Vice President for Students Demand Action, and they are both University of Pittsburgh students. Welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, there have been gatherings and vigils earlier this week to honor and remember the victims and to decry hatred and bigotry. The rally that you hosted Wednesday evening was called Unite Against Hatred. There was a call for what I believe you described as white nationalistic rhetoric. Do you feel that it is hateful but protected free speech, or that it's sort of encouraging illegal actions? Catherine, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. I think that hate speech is never something that should be allowed in this country. I think that hate and violence are intimately intertwined, and one leads to the other. Thus, if we allow hate speech and we normalize it and we give people a platform to spread it, that we're also giving violent people the opportunity to bring their views to light and the opportunity to enable one another to commit more acts of violence.
And I also agree that it's definitely something that's gone severely untampered by the administration that's in office today. I mean, we all remember after Charlottesville when our president went on national TV and said that, you know, the people who were protesting, the white nationalists who were definitely spouting a lot of hate speech, not just at Jewish people, but at a lot of minority groups, said that they were very fine people, and that just it sort of gives them a standing. It gives them legitimacy to continue with their rhetoric and the actions that their words lead to.
Right. Well, how would you respond to somebody say, until that speech actually calls for violent action, I mean, shouldn't it be protected by the First Amendment?
I would say that as long as we're making some people feel as if they are correct and that necessarily there is an other that is the opposite of them, that is the negative pieces of what they have, that is going to cause people to feel protective, that's going to cause people to draw lines in the sand and say, this is mine, that is yours, and that'll be the way it is. And we have to bridge those gaps and bring people together instead of putting up walls between us.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that, you know, hate speech sort of just, it allows for people to continue to segregate themselves within their groups, within their minorities, and call on the minority groups like us to be an out-group and sort of like, we don't deserve to be here, we don't deserve to have the things we have. Like, it gives them a standing to say, we shouldn't be here, we should be living in fear. And this is what begets, like, actions of course, like Saturday.
And Shai, to build off what you're saying too, I think that one of the pieces that we wanted to very clearly talk about last night at the rally is that we have to talk about anti-Semitism in right. the context of white nationalism in order to have a productive conversation. We know that white nationalism not only is against, you know, about race or about ethnicity, but it's also about religion. It's about sexual orientation. It's about your citizenship status. And we can't leave any of those pieces out if we're going to have a robust and meaningful conversation about what it means to fight against hate.
One of the messages that was repeatedly brought up during the rally last night had to do with ending gun violence. So are you calling for stricter gun control legislation? If so, what?
Well, Students Demand Action is a organization under Everytown. We are sister chapters to the organization that led the March for Our Lives. We are calling for an end to gun violence in many, many forms. It's not necessarily an end to all guns. We don't, as an organization, we don't believe that. I don't personally think that it would ever work in our country, which is so ingrained in gun culture, but we definitely want stricter background checks. We want a higher age. We want an end to semi-automatic assault rifles. We just want to live in a country where our neighbors and our fellow citizens can't be gunned down in like mass numbers.
And the alleged gunman in the synagogue shootings, according to law enforcement, was armed with three handguns, Glocks, as well as an AR-15 mm-hmm. semi-automatic. Catherine, you were going to add.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we can call for an end to gun violence without necessarily calling for an end to guns existing here in America. There are things that we can do that would not limit the constitutional freedoms of Americans, but that would significantly limit the amount of harm that one person can do to another. We can limit high-capacity magazines. We can create universal background checks. There is a lot that we can do to take guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have them.
All right. So speakers last night included a religious school, Sunday religious school teacher from Temple Sinai. Give us briefly, what was her message?
Her name was Steffi Wright. She primarily spoke about her trying to live up to her grandmother's legacy of using food to unite people. She told the story about how she brought in soup for her students, and even though she was really worried that they were going to be, you know, very hurt, very saddened by what was happening, and it was going to be really hard for her to explain to her Jewish students that this happened because they're Jewish, she said that it was a very uplifting experience. They all banded together, and her main message was that you can use food to unite people.
One of the other speakers at the rally last night was Emily Svitek. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, a grad student at Pitt. Why did she say gun control, gun violence is so important to her? She has a connection to a deadly shooting coming up on 6 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. She was a student at Sandy Hook Elementary School, not during the time of the shooting, but she was a student there. And so many of us have intimately been touched, or those who we love have been touched by gun violence. And for us, it's not just an issue that we care about. It's an issue that we have to care about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So with just a couple minutes to go, what are your realistic hopes for change when it comes to guns, even some of the things that you mentioned, Catherine, when there weren't major changes legislatively at the federal or state levels? There were some after the Las Vegas shootings of about 13 months ago, mm-hmm. or after the school shootings in Parkland earlier this year, or even after the killing of 5 and 6 year olds at Sandy Hook just about 6 years ago. So, I mean, what are your realistic hopes?
Yeah, I think one thing is that there is a law out there that has been passed in some states and not in Pennsylvania that allows for the removal of firearms from by law enforcement, from those who are deemed to be in some sort of crisis or who have shown that they might be dangerous and a threat to themselves or to others. Oftentimes, incidents like these don't occur out of nowhere, especially the shooting this past Saturday. I mean, there were hints. He was online. He was saying that he hated Jews. He was targeting Hayas, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. And there were clues. There were clues that he was dangerous and that he meant what he said. And for us to be able to take that hatred seriously and to be able to take firearms out of the hands of people who clearly have an intent to harm and to make their hatred into violent actions, that we can do something about that.
Sure.
Well, you know, I think it can be very disheartening that we're not really seeing a fast, hard change with regard to gun laws. But Students Demand Action, myself and one of my other board members, Ritika Bajpai, we were invited 2 weeks ago to talk about the act that PA just recently passed. It was our first gun control law in, I think, a decade, and it was to disarm domestic abusers and to be celebrating that alongside Michael Bloomberg, Mayor Peduto, and then a week later be so brutally reminded why we can't stop working, why this is never going to be enough, is just, it's very disheartening. It's really saddening. But, you know, I think that the amount of people who want to see a change severely outnumber the amount of people who think that this is okay, who think that we should be facing fear every day. And I think that, you know, by voting, by electing officials who are going to stand with us against white nationalism, against anti-Semitism, against the NRA, I think that's the only way that we can really enact change.
That is Shai Goodman. She is Vice President for Students Demand Action. We're also joined today by Catherine Fleischer, Jewish Community Liaison for Students Demand Action. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Today's program was produced and engineered by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Mick Stinelli. The producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Till next time, hope you have a peaceful day.